You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 10th of June 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at radioalbion.com because we have with us Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from russjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
Well, I don't want to alarm you, but I just saw a picture of Victoria Nuland as I was researching for today's show and I'm not doing great. My stomach hurts. My back, lower back hurts. I need to tell myself no pictures of Biden bureaucrats before the show. I have that rule on a sticky note on my wall. I didn't even pay any attention to it. So if I just cut out, just go from there. Please, just forgive me. It was a very difficult day for me.
That must have been quite frightening for you to see Victoria Nuland again. It's like Biden has got the old team back together again, hasn't he? He's got the old band back together. Victoria Nuland and various others from the Obama administration. And we're going to be talking today about Biden's upcoming meeting with Putin. Before we get to that, though, we'll just talk a little bit about his upcoming meeting with Boris Johnson, which has just taken place. In a statement construed by some as a warning, President Biden kicked off his first foreign trip as US leader by announcing that he was heading to meet Russian President Vladimir Putin to let him know what I want him to know. Biden touched down in the UK on Wednesday ahead of a meeting with Prime Minister Boris Johnson today and the start of the G7 summit on Friday. His schedule in the coming days is a busy one. From the G7 in Cornwall, Biden will travel to Brussels for a NATO summit and then on to Switzerland in a week's time to meet his Russian counterpart. It is the latter engagement that is perhaps the most eagerly anticipated one by pundits and journalists. Nearly 3 years after the US commentariat hammered Donald Trump for apparently failing to condemn Putin vocally enough at a meeting in Helsinki, liberals in the media and lawmakers in both parties will expect Biden to take a tougher stance after the president called Putin a killer and promised on the campaign trail to make him pay a price for alleged election interference. And Biden appeared yesterday and he spoke to American troops, I believe, and American diplomats that were in Britain. And he's met up with Boris Johnson today and Boris Johnson's new wife, and the media has all been talking about how Boris Johnson will be expecting to do a Brexit deal with Biden, and yet Biden said that he didn't want to do a Brexit deal. And if the media were so concerned about doing a deal, why were they so anti-Donald Trump? And Donald Trump was a complete Anglophile, whereas Joe Biden has appeared to be very against Britain right from the beginning. So if Boris Johnson was concerned about doing Brexit deals and trade deals with America, he should have stuck by Donald Trump rather than trying to suck up to Biden. It all looks very hypocritical, but we're here to talk about the upcoming meeting with Putin. But have you got any comments about Biden's meeting with Boris Johnson before we get onto that, Matt?
Well, don't forget the Democrats and I believe CNN were claiming that the whole Brexit movement was a Russian conspiracy. Same thing for Italy. Their desire to leave the EU also came from Russia. And remember, we refer to Joe Biden in quotes because he doesn't have the capacity really to worry about any of this stuff or to articulate anything. He's getting information from an earpiece from some mysterious source, and that's the basis of what he's saying. So President Biden is always in quotes in this respect.
contested President Biden. There appears to be two of him as well. If you look closely at the pictures, if you look at his ears, and he has this vacant stare about him. He gives me the creeps. He really does. Well, Biden served them some meat on Wednesday, speaking to a gathering of U.S. forces in Suffolk. Biden outlined his travel plans, stating that he would be meeting with Putin to let him know what I want him to know. Biden's tough guy declaration drew rapturous applause from the troops in attendance and was described by many commentators online as a warning. Yet Biden then claimed to want a stable, predictable relationship with Russia, built around the responsibilities that both powers shoulder. But I have been clear that the United States will respond in a robust and meaningful way if the Russian government engages in harmful activities, Biden stuttered. I'm going to communicate that there are consequences for violating the sovereignty of democracies in the United States and Europe and elsewhere. Biden's invocation of sovereignty of democracies is standard democratic boilerplate, and under this, Biden can press Putin on a number of issues, including alleged election interference, the detention of opposition activist Alexei Navalny, and global cyber attacks. Both the former and the latter have been linked to Moscow by the US media and some officials, although no evidence of Russian involvement in either has been provided. And I did hear today that Navalny's movement have been declared extremists. I think they may have now been banned in Russia. And the reason why he was arrested is because he broke his bail conditions, and not by going to Germany. He was allowed to go to Germany. He'd broken his bail condition dozens of times, hundreds of times before that. We're not actually told that by the Western media. What do you make about this, Matt, anyway?
Well, you know, we've done a whole show on the Navalny case. I've done one on the Orthodox Nationalist. I have articles coming, Russia Insider and all these other places on this case. But I want to make it clear that we also talked about this. Joe Biden was one of the negotiators in 1979, I believe it was, in the Soviet Union. And he did not speak like this. He spoke in the most respectful terms. Now, you have an empire with huge prison camps, no conception of human rights by any definition. And he did not speak to them like this. They were not enemies to him. They were not to be condemned. He spoke like a diplomat would. Only when a nationalist or a Eurasianist takes power, all of a sudden now the entire U.S. regime goes crazy. Soviet Union, there were no sanctions, everything, trade was robust like everything else. So, I mean, we actually see Biden then and Biden now, and again, Biden in quotes, at least now, and it shows you the difference between the ideologies. The Soviet Union, no one denies what they were doing. Putin, all this is nonsense. And don't forget, Navalny was a totally unknown, almost totally unknown person. His group got, you know, like 5-6% of the vote at the most. All these arrests do is put these men as international celebrities. We talked about that with the Belarusian case. So he is a criminal. He's done a lot wrong. His source of income comes from absolutely nowhere. The man has never worked a day in his life. And of course, educated in the U.S. So this everything is suspicious here. The layers of error here I couldn't disentangle in 3 hours.
Well, the point is, Alexei Navalny is trying to overturn what he calls the regime, which means he's trying to overturn the Russian government. It's the same as this Dmitry Romanovich. Maybe I'm getting his name wrong. The Belarusian guy. I mean, he's an extremist as well. He's trying to overturn the government. And you could say that this violating the sovereignty of democracies. I mean, maybe you could apply that to Crimea. Possibly, because that did used to be a part of Ukraine. But I don't see how Russia has violated the sovereignty of America. I mean, all they're really pointing to there is RT offering a different point of view. Are they saying that the sovereignty of the democracy is to enforce one point of view only? And if anybody veers from that, then they are violating the sovereignty of democracies? Well, surely that is what people like Alexei Navalny are doing in Russia. It's the pot calling the kettle black here. Although Biden's allies in the US media have portrayed the president as tough on Putin before it was cool, Biden has nevertheless granted his Russian counterpart one major foreign policy concession since taking office. He waived sanctions on the landmark Nord Stream 2 pipeline, allowing the project linking Russia's natural gas fields to European consumers to finally near completion. Former President Donald Trump, despite constant accusations at home of being soft on Russia, stalled the project by more than a year with sanctions. Putin, in the meantime, described Biden as an experienced, balanced, and careful man who had spent his whole life in politics, and expressed the hope that those qualities would have a positive effect on the upcoming negotiations, but said he was not expecting anything that could become a breakthrough in Russia-US relations. And this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, Donald Trump was actually very harsh on Russia. I mean, putting sanctions on this pipeline, and what Biden has done is quietly removed the sanctions from the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. I mean, I haven't heard anything about that in the mainstream press. So what do you make of these double standards here, Matt?
Well, there's really only one standard, and that is the promotion of liberal capitalism abroad. And, you know, contradictory actions make sense when you realize that, you know, objectivity and even-handedness has never been a concern. There is one agenda. And as far as international affairs are concerned, the agenda is to smash Russia. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization is the battering ram against liberalism worldwide. Now, calling Biden an experienced, balanced, you know, he spent his whole life in government. You understand the way Putin speaks. Of course, I have a whole book on Putin's political theory. It's mockery. It's saying that this man spent his whole life in government. He has no idea how anything really works. He's corrupt. That's really what he's saying here. And, you know, balanced and careful, meaning he doesn't really know what he's doing. Because careful, that's the last thing you could call him, especially under under Obama. The Nord Stream 2, it came as a shock to me. But once you realize that Germany is refusing to enforce any sanctions on this, the EU may fall apart over this. This is the reason. And the fact that he could just unilaterally remove a sanction shows you just how ridiculous the sanctions regime is. I have a whole paper on how ridiculous even the idea legally of sanctions, how ridiculous the idea is. So there's a lot of complexity here. But, you know, Russia is clearly going to win this. Russia has done nothing wrong. They're willing to speak on equal terms with the U.S., despite the U.S. not being a superpower at any level, despite the U.S. being the aggressor at every step, both with Russia and China. But a guy like Biden and those who are feeding his earpiece are never going to win, even diplomatically, against Russia, because Putin will outplay them at every step.
Yeah, I think it's going to be similar to when Anthony Blinken went to meet his Chinese counterpart, and the Chinese counterpart just pointed out that who are you to be telling us what to do within our own borders? And Anthony Blinken went away with his tail between his legs. I think the same thing is going to happen with this upcoming meeting here. Well, after US President Joe Biden revealed his plans to raise the issue of human rights when he meets his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, next month, Moscow has said it is happy to have the discussion as long as it goes both ways. Speaking as part of a press conference on Monday, Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov announced that we are ready to talk. We have no taboo topics. We will discuss whatever we think is necessary. We will be ready to answer the questions that the American side will raise. This also applies to human rights. However, he said, one issue likely to be on the table is far closer to home for Biden than others might be. For example, we are following with interest the persecution of those persons who are accused of the riots on January 6th this year in Washington. There, Lavrov added, a lot of really interesting things are happening from the point of view of the rights of the opposition and protecting those rights. His comments come just one day after Biden declared he would take a tough stance on questions of civil liberties during a Memorial Day speech in Delaware. I'm meeting with President Putin in a couple of weeks in Geneva, making it clear we will not stand by and let him abuse those rights, he said. It's time to remind everybody who we are. More than 400 people have been identified as part of investigations into the January 6th attack on the Capitol building, where crowds pushed their way into the legislature, sending politicians and staff members scrambling to safety. 5 people died in the incident, including a police officer and a protester shot dead as she attempted to access a secure corridor. And the actual family of that protester are now having to take the government to court just to try and find out who it was that actually shot her. And there's been no investigation into the police officer that shot her. You imagine if something like that was happening in Russia. But I have to say, I mean, you pointed out at the beginning, you know, the obnoxiousness of Victoria Nuland, and most of Biden's cabinet are obnoxious. But when I think about the representatives that we have in Russia, you know, Sergei Lavrov has always seemed, you know, quite a decent person. I've always warmed towards him. There's also Dmitry Peskov, the Kremlin spokesman, who we will hear of from soon as well. And he's another guy that seems, you know, very likable, very approachable. You know, they seem to be genuine and to be genuinely mystified by the way that America treats Russia. What do you think of what's being said here about the human rights abuses of American protesters, Matt?
Well, Lavrov gave a speech in late January laying out Russia's foreign policy. And one of the main points was, first of all, access to information, which he claims that the U.S. big tech companies are preventing. He even cites the Helsinki Final Act, the Charter of Paris, that every person has a right to freely express their opinion by any means, including, you know, private firms. This is the way that political debate takes place. He says the U.S. has to assume responsibility for their actions. He also condemned the election in the U.S. He said the mail-in voting was plagued with serious problems. Then he went on to talk about Trump's persecution of Trump supporters everywhere, and of course the Capitol riots. And he's talking about the American centering textbooks. The very fact that private companies do this, who are far more powerful in government than they are in Russia, has nothing to do with it. It is a totalitarian system. So Lavrov is not kidding here. He is essentially bringing down the entire Biden charade. He's saying things that Putin wouldn't say because he's too diplomatic. And that's why his speech back in January was missed by everybody.
Well, he's also criticized the anti-white propaganda coming out of Hollywood and the political correctness and putting black actors in the place of white historical persons. I mean, it's pretty rare that you hear something like that from a main person on the world stage. And Sergei Lavrov has actually been the foreign minister in Russia for, I think, decades now, as long as I can remember. There is something to be said for having people in a position all the time doing their job, because they just get better and better at it. With the liberal democracies, they get replaced every 5 years. And yet, when you look at the Russian administration, you've got Putin, who's been there for about 20 years. You've got Lavrov, who's been there for just as long. And you've got Dmitry Peskov, who's been there for just as long. And the longer they're there doing that job, the better they get at doing it. Well, long-awaited in-person talks between Russian President Vladimir Putin and his American counterpart Joe Biden, set to take place in Switzerland this month, are a significant step. But there is little hope for a thaw in relations. That's according to Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov, who told reporters on Friday at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum that there was a risk that expectations for the summit might spiral out of control. In his view, the head-to-head on June 16th in Geneva will be very, very important, but it would be wrong to have high hopes for the meeting. The potential for us disagreeing and even conflicting is so great that there is no reason to expect any progress in reaching mutual understandings. That said, he argued, sometimes it is useful to agree that we do not agree. Despite playing up the differences between the two sides, the Kremlin official has also said that Putin is ready to move past any personal animosity sparked by comments in March, when Biden was asked whether he believed his Russian counterpart to be a killer. In an interview with the ABC News channel, I do, the US president replied. The diplomatic spat that followed saw top politicians in Moscow accuse Biden of launching an attack on the whole of Russia, with Parliamentary Speaker Vyacheslav Volodin slamming the comments as indicative of a decline in civility and respect in international relations. Putin himself was more circumspect, citing a childhood mantra that what you say about others is what you are. yourself. I remember him saying that, and I remember thinking, well, that's quite a good reply. There's also there's a female spokesman that they have to the EU that seems pretty good as well. I just think they seem to have picked their representatives that actually interact with the rest of the world very well in Russia. Would you agree with that, Matt?
Yeah, the US is so vulnerable. This is pure projection on the part of the regime. Remember, Nuland and Blinken, well, most of these bureaucrats, they leave government service and they go and they create private sector elite firms. They both have done this. So West Exec Advisors was Blinken's. And this was a way to private companies who are non-disclosed, including governments like Israel, several times. Blinken, of course, is Jewish. To be able to get around international regulations and essentially have an in with government. It's pure corruption. So that means when these guys get back into government, it's the private sector who is running things. There's your direct link, because these are elite firms. West Exec is as corrupt as you can get. And it just shows the revolving door between the private and public sectors, meaning that there is no difference between the private and public sectors. That is not the case in Russia or China. So you're not really dealing with two governments. You're dealing with a government state on the one hand and a group of private corporations working through a state on the other. And that's how they're able to simply control this, like Weekend at Bernie's thing with Biden, and use that poor soul as a front man. And that's really all he is. He's a Boris Yeltsin of this decade.
You know, the Russians do seem to still have alpha males and alpha females that they put into these government positions. I mean, maybe I'm being too kind to them, but I guess that shows that their propaganda is working. I mean, I don't know how the American propaganda plays out in Russia. Quite clearly, it plays out quite well, because Navalny was able to get quite a few people supporting him for these protests, which were completely illegal. Well, let's take a little step back in time and look at Trump's summit with Putin. Before we give in to hopes that the Biden-Putin summit will result in better relations between the US and Russia, we should remember the Trump-Putin summit in Helsinki in July 2018. The US media and the Democrat Party used the Trump-Putin summit to blacken the event as where Putin cemented his status and the status of Russia as US public enemy number one. The American establishment made certain the summit would fail. 3 days prior to the summit, the Department of Justice indicted 12 Russian GRU officers. 2 days prior to the summit, Senate Democrats urged Trump to cancel the summit meeting. CIA Director John Brennan said that the press conference following the summit showed that Trump exceeded the threshold of high crimes and misdemeanors. It was nothing short of treasonous. Not only were Trump's comments imbecile, Trump is wholly in the pocket of Putin. In other words, the Democrat Party, the US military security complex, and the American media considered Trump's meeting with Putin an act of treason. Regardless of whether anything good happened at the Trump-Putin summit, the media prostitutes, Democrats, and CIA control the narrative. Now, I thought this was a really good summit. I really did like Trump's answer to when the press were asking whether Putin had meddled in the election. And he just said to Putin, "Did you meddle in the election?" And Putin says he didn't meddle in the election. Well, that's good enough for me. He didn't meddle in the election. I mean, it's such a ridiculous question to ask. I mean, where do they base that allegation on? Simply because RT is available in America, and RT is obviously going to provide the Russian point of view on things, the same as we provide an alternative point of view here. I hope we're not too pro-Russian, but we do try to provide an alternative point of view, and that's all the Russians were doing, was providing their point of view. What do you recall about the Trump-Putin summit, Matt?
Well, we did a show on it, and I don't think there is any such thing as being too pro-Russian. I mean, the very fact that you have me on at all means you're going to be, that ship has sailed. But to have the CIA director say this, this man, and he's admitting essentially the research is coming out of the CIA is completely tainted, that you can't trust anything they say, calling him an imbecile, this kind of thing. As the director of the CIA, who's supposed to be apolitical. And to be honest with you, I forgot about that. And everything they did to try to destroy this, again, private sectors at the helm here, major firms who are being shut out of the Russian market, or whatever the issue is, who desperately need Putin gone. again, as far as Navalny is concerned, the last time his group ever ran for election, I think he got 6%, something like that. The massive saturation coverage may have increased that. And I think you're absolutely right. I think with the diplomats, these guys are able to say things that Putin wants to say, but because he's the president, he can't be, you know, he can't come out like Lukashenko does and just condemn the whole Western liberal world. I mean, he has, but especially the stupid killer comment. I mean, this is a man Biden has back in the Obama administration, Bush, he supported every invasion, every war. He is at least partially responsible for the death of God knows how many hundreds of thousands of civilians. And the killer comment, I don't think he really understood it because of his answer was, you know, he was just kind of mumbling. But for him to say that, I mean, there was definitely some, assuming he's not a sociopath, there was definitely some cognitive dissonance there because he knows exactly what he's responsible for. He supported every one of these wars and a massive military budget because the Russian military budget is purely defensive. That's why it's such a small percentage of the GDP. The U.S. has an empire and it's completely offensive. So the U.S. is spending itself into oblivion here. That fact alone shows that all their stories about Russia are false. The budget is purely defensive. They've done nothing offensive abroad except to respond to U.S., who is for decades has been doing everything in its power to try to declare war on Russia, provoke a war that, of course, it can't win. And it doesn't matter what the administration is, what the official ideology of these guys are, the way that the federal government operates, it's a private sector regime. Their policy has been exactly the same, whether it be Trump or Obama or Bush. It's identical in every case. It has nothing to do with who the president is. And as you pointed out, Trump is far harsher on Russia than Obama was. Wholly in the pocket of Putin. I mean, Brendan knew exactly what Trump's policies were. The guy simply went on, you know, did this interview and lied. And that's the head of the CIA. So we simply can't trust anything. So that's one of our role here as alternative press, and mine in particular, is to give the truth, not the alternative point of view, but the truth. Because, you know, people are being lied to, including some well-meaning people, and they take the wrong opinion out of it.
Well, the CIA were constantly trying to undermine Trump, and I think Biden's made a point of showing that he is in the pocket of the CIA by repeating what they told him about so-called white supremacists being the biggest domestic terror threat in America, basically saying that Donald Trump supporters are the biggest domestic terror threat. It's Biden who has surrounded the White House with the army. I think they're still there. You know, it's just like a third world country where a coup has taken place. Well, the question before us is, if it was treason for Trump to meet with Putin, why is it permissible for Biden to meet with Putin? The answer, perhaps, is that the Biden-Putin summit is a propaganda trap for the Kremlin, just as the Kremlin walked into a propaganda trap when it allowed Navalny to take his poison complaint to Germany. The Kremlin might be repeating the folly by agreeing to the meeting with Biden. We know from reports of the pre-summit meeting of Lavrov and the US Secretary of State that Biden's agenda is a list of accusations against Russia. In other words, Biden's intent is to hold Putin accountable. Obviously, no improved relations can come from such a meeting unless Putin confesses to the accusations and promises to behave better in the future. Otherwise, Washington's narrative will be that the summit was a failure due to Putin's unreasonableness. Putin wouldn't agree to stop poisoning people. Putin wouldn't agree to stop invading countries. Putin would not agree to stop interfering in elections. Putin would not agree to stop cyber attacks. In other words, Washington will use the summit to reiterate the status of Putin's Russia as US public enemy number one. This is almost certain to be the outcome. Washington is using the Russian desire to be accepted by the West to draw an incautious Kremlin into a propaganda trap. The Biden regime consists of ideologues and is probably the least professional government in US history, but professionalism has nothing to do with it. Biden has many of the same people, Victoria Nuland, for example, who organized the Maidan Revolution and installed in Ukraine a government hostile to Moscow. Despite Kremlin diplomatic efforts in the European Union, recently the European Parliament voted to support regime change in Russia. With such a high degree of Western hostility towards Russia, how can the Kremlin expect any positive result from the summit? Matt, what is your answer to that question?
Well, what he's referring to there, coming out of the so-called European Parliament, which everyone kind of snickers at, a document where they did come out and say, you know, Putin needs to be overthrown. And they gave a list of the same, you know, charges, acts of terrorism somehow against the Czech Republic, supporting Lukashenko, the repression of democratic forces, you know, the Navalny case. And so you have the European Parliament coming out and saying he needs to be overthrown pretty much by any means necessary. Because you couldn't do it legally, so if you have to do it illegally. That's what he's referring to there. And I remember the European Parliament does something no one really cares, because they don't matter. But they are elite people here. But these quotes you mentioned come from Paul Craig Roberts, one of my favorite writers, an economist from the Reagan administration who no longer has elite status because of what he's saying. So he's lost all that. But he also goes on to say that it's building Russia up as this fake enemy is absolutely necessary for the multi-trillion-dollar defense industry. NATO's whole existence is based on it. The entire regime has this Russia threat as its main straw man. It's true, though, that as far as liberals are concerned, to destroy Russia, Russian government right now is the number one priority, because Russia is really the main international force fighting liberalism right now. That's their whole reason, ideologically speaking. And Russia and China together have been far more successful and rational in all of their policies, economic and otherwise, than the U.S. has been. And Lavrov couldn't be any clearer about that. So this, the whole Russiagate thing, trying to prevent the normalization of relationships between Russia and the U.S., anything to keep that any kind of friendship from developing. So they'll provoke and provoke and provoke until one day you'll have a Russian sergeant shoot back. And God knows what's going to happen. And that's really the great fear that any rational person should have.
Well, why is Russia going along with it then? Why has Putin agreed to meet Biden? Because it does seem as if it's just a trap. He's just going to say to him, do you apologize for this? Will you apologize for this? Will you apologize for this? Putin refused to see sense and he's a terrible person. So why is Putin bothering to go along with it?
Well, I don't see why he wouldn't. Because Biden is so vulnerable as a man. Putin has performed brilliantly in these summits and confrontations before. He's so vulnerable. He's so easy to befuddle. I think it gives him a forum to tell the truth that's going to be very hard to censor. So I think that has a lot to do with it. This is a forum. This is a platform. And Biden is such an easy target. I'm kind of looking forward to it.
Yeah, when you put it like that, I mean, it could be that he turns the tables on him. It could be quite exciting, actually. So we'll look forward to that in Switzerland next week. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.